History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. Let's talk about trends, first in the global economy, and then in the youth workforce. And then we'll get to the trend where Gen Z doesn't go on dates. But we'll kick things off with the economy from KMOX in St. Louis.
I'm John Horn, economics professor in the Olin Business School at Washington University in St. Louis. Do you agree that the conflict with Iran has triggered some permanent changes in our global economy?
The simple answer is yes. The more complicated answer is, even if there's an agreement tomorrow that sort of says for the next 20 years, the U.S. and Iran agree to all kinds of conditions and stipulations, I think there's enough uncertainty about what might come about. Reading today about Iran putting an insurance on passage through the strait, and they could shut it down at any point, not just because of something the U.S. does. I think a lot of businesses and a lot of countries are starting to question, we always thought we were going to get oil, but now that might not be the case, and we don't know what's going to happen with these shocks. And so I think there's just a lot more uncertainty. I know we've talked about tariff uncertainty before. This is just one more thing to pile on top of it.
When you have a lack of confidence in something so key as, for example, the Strait of Hormuz, what are the ripple effects of that?
I think what's the challenging thing with it is it, at its base, it's energy. And energy is sort of drives everything, whether it's delivery of our packages that we order, it's the energy which runs the factories which produce the things, it's the energy which powers the utilities which create the power for our homes or for our computers or for whatever. That there's so much that we rely on for energy. It's not just like, oh, well, we can't get this computer chip anymore. It's everything. And so the price of everything gets adjusted, and the uncertainty about should we switch now to different forms of energy development or storage, most of those are not, you know, 2 or 3 year investments. And so to think about, should we do that? It's sort of like with the tariffs. If this is going to be in place for 15, 20 years, yeah, I'll bring manufacturing back. If this sort of challenge with the Strait of Hormuz is going to happen for the next 15, 20 years, then absolutely let's invest in solar and wind and alternative technologies. But if it's going to be over in 18 months, maybe you just ride it out. And I think that's sort of why it's so challenging, is it's you start to make a shift into some new big investment, and then it just goes away. And everyone else is sitting there saying, great, we're back with low energy prices. That makes it hard for you to be the first one to just take that step.
Could this kind of reshift who the power brokers are when we talk about energy markets?
I think we've always sort of seen the Middle East as the power brokers with oil. But we've seen now that the UAE and Saudi Arabia, UAE essentially pulled out of OPEC. And now seems like more tension among Middle East countries, not sort of aligning behind what OPEC should be doing. And so for the oil production around the world, there could be shifts in who you pay attention to, plus more risks, because for better or for worse, you just look to OPEC and that sort of was the decision-making about what was going to happen with oil markets.
Anytime there's a shift in the world, not everybody is at a disadvantage. There are some corporations, some countries that can benefit from situations like this. Have you seen that?
Well, the big one seems to be China. Like I said before, they're sort of the manufacturing hub of the world. And so for producing solar panels, batteries, wind turbines, the equipment which runs all that, to the extent that there's a shift away from oil and gas production to alternative energy sources, China's sort of primed to be the supplier to the world for those for that equipment. Because of the conflict with the United States in terms of trade, are they going to be able to continue to trade with the U.S.? Where else in the world can they sell everything they keep producing? And they have some challenges with their own internal economy growing in terms of consumption and sort of compensating for what they can't sell. So China's well positioned in terms of the technology and in terms of the production and the manufacturing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go back to like 10% growth that they had a couple of decades ago.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
It experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So that's the global economy. How about in the United States? How hard is it for teens to get a summer job? Here's Tommy Tucker in New Orleans.
Sam DeMace, a career expert for ZipRecruiter. Tell me what's going on with summer jobs.
This is the most difficult summer on record for teens to land jobs. It's kind of a perfect storm situation that we're facing, unfortunately, due to a couple of reasons. Entertainment and leisure, which typically hires a lot of teens in summer camp roles, amusement parks, restaurants, they have downsized hiring due to economic uncertainty, rising costs of inflation. That coupled with competition being at an all-time high for jobs, teens are now competing with recent college grads and even older folks who are clinging onto their jobs right now.
Really?
That's what we're dealing with.
So older folks and even people that what, would be afraid to take vacation almost or something along those lines?
Not necessarily that. I hope they're still taking vacation, but we see a lot of folks job hugging right now and staying in their roles long term. So people who normally might, you know, move on to a new job or retire are holding on to those jobs because they want to continue saving, considering the cost of living.
What are some of the fields for people that have a teenager right now that's looking for a job that where they maybe could get a foot in the door or at least find something to do this summer?
I think you can definitely really focus and hone in on your local community where there are still opportunities to be found. You can even carve out an opportunity for yourself by starting your own small business. But within your local community, I would look at pet sitting, house sitting, elder care, running errands, yard work, tech support for seniors, or tutoring. ZipRecruiter posts these kinds of opportunities, or you can seek out your local community and ask around.
Fantastic advice, but turns out Gen Z isn't great at asking some questions. Like, would you like to go out with me? Here's KCBS.
New survey from Bank of America found 51% of those 18 to 29 years old spend $0 on dates a month. Nearly a quarter of respondents say they are delaying moving relationships forward because they can't afford it. Julie Spira, is this a new problem?
I think it's a growing trend, and it's worth, you know, opening your eyes to this. If we're looking at a $200 date, think about that. Dates might have been 25 to 50. It's roughly equivalent to maybe a monthly payment on a modest used car for some buyers, maybe a car lease payment, maybe half of that, auto insurance, gas, these things, groceries, you know, they all add up. And then there's just no room for expensive $200 date.
So, I mean, what does this do at the very start of what could turn into a relationship? One person ask the other person out, I mean, do they make it clear, hey, listen, I don't have any money, so we're going to have to go for a walk or something?
Well, I think it's great to set expectations early on and steer away from the fancy date and say, I would really love to meet you, and I value conversations over trendy restaurants. And then you're really setting the tone. And yes, go on a walk, go to a park, find a free concert to go to if music is important. Suggest something that's not going to break the bank.
Well, what if the other person likes a nice dinner and a $75 bottle of wine?
Well, for a first date, when there's no guarantee of a second date, $75 bottle of wine, that's kind of pricey.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, if you're trying to impress somebody with the 70, I mean, I guess it's kind of a catch-22. You want to impress them, but you can't afford to impress them.
I think the most important thing isn't saying that you can't afford. I think it's really good to say that you're fiscally responsible. And I think that's actually very appealing to other singles who are not interested in somebody love bombing them. The thing you can do is have quality conversations, and that really starts with going someplace a little casual. Even those who can afford a $200 date, there's nothing wrong with not spending that on a first date and just getting to know someone.
Is pulling back on spending on dates, is this exclusive to Gen Z?
I don't think so. I know that millennials also feel the same way. And then if you're looking at people who are retired and maybe they are on fixed incomes, I think this really can span multiple generations right now, especially when you go and try to put gas in your car and you get to sticker shock. It is so expensive. And sometimes that means people are graduating and they're moving in with their parents, or they're moving into an apartment where there may be three or four people that are in a two-bedroom apartment. They're doing what they can as they build their careers because, yes, you want to balance enjoying your lifestyle, building your career, but at the same point, you don't want to go broke trying to go on date after date after date and potentially having one-and-done dates for a couple $100 a week. That's a lot.
Maybe there is some great interest, but they go slower than they really want to because they have to?
Slow dating right now is a very big trend. There is no rush to run to get a ring to propose to somebody. And of course, we know the prices of those are quite high. So I'd say with 25% that are delaying moving forward, they're engaging what we call slow dating. That is getting to know somebody over multiple seasons. And I think that's a healthy way to look at relationships. But also looking at the BOA survey, that means 75% are moving forward. So it's really case by case.
That's really interesting. And in some ways, I mean, it's kind of sad, right? I mean, what does it say about society?
Well, it says that everything has a price tag attached to it. And that is sad.
Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Odyssey's On Deadline. Subscribe to the daily podcast on your favorite platform.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.